Behind the Wheel with Peter Hitchener and Chris Miller.
Driven by behindthewheel.com.au.
When do we go for a ride?
Oh, look out. Here we go again. Buckle up, ladies and gentlemen. It is another edition of Behind the Wheel where we talk, strangely enough, cars.
Amazing. How about that?
Isn't it? And yeah, a huge list of cars that we've got to get through this week, Pete.
Very much so. Very much so. Now, I hear there's something new and rather angry coming along, and I'm thinking, yep, it's not
You can
Chris
hear it in the
Miller.
Background.
Oh, that's what it is. Oh. Well, when you said anger, I thought, no, not Chris Miller. He, even in a traffic jam, he stays calm. So what is it? Tell us, come on now. It's an Audi, isn't it? Come on.
Sorry, I just lost it there for a second. An Audi, yes, but with an RS badge, and I think the one that kind of cemented the RS badge first up, the RS4. Yep. Of course, it is a manic station wagon, or Avant, as Audi like to call
it. It's very Avant. Steady on.
Steady on, old chap. based on the current edition of the best ever Audi A4, because the one getting around now, I don't think there's ever been a better one, there have been some good ones in the past.
Yep.
But this thing is promising to be an absolute rip-snorter, ball-terror. Can't think of any other superlatives to add to it.
Fast and Furious, maybe.
Yeah, okay, let's go with that. Okay, anyway. I like that. Sean Cleary, he's the man from Audi. He's the one who knows all the details. He's been to the factory. He's seen how they tighten the bolts and do all the things that they do. He's going to tell us more.
I'm looking forward
hopefully make a bit of sense.
Looking forward to that now.
As opposed to me.
Of course you do. You always do. That's how you roll. Hey, listen, I saw a Mazda 6 just yesterday and just caught it from an odd angle and I thought, gosh, that's a great looking car. It's a Mazda 6. Of course it's a great looking car.
Yeah, absolutely beautiful and been around for a little while now and just come in for, well, I suppose you could call it like a midlife update, but it's a fairly significant one. And one that I'm particularly excited about because they've shoehorned the engine that we loved in the Mazda CX-9, which was our car of the year last year.
It was beautiful.
And it's not often that you kind of get into an SUV and you go, this engine's a peach. But in this particular instance in the Mazda, it is 2.5 litre turbocharged 4-cylinder, in excess, I think it's 420-odd newton metres. Anyway, they've bung that in the front of the Mazda 6, so finally we're going to get some performance out of a car that always had a great chassis, you know, a great driving position, so now it's kind of got a bit of power to match. So I'm looking forward to hearing more about what they've done to the Mazda 6, and marketing manager of Mazda Australia, Alastair Doak, will join us a little later with all those details, including, I believe, a twigged diesel. They've upgraded the safety systems,
that's all happening.
Lots to look forward to.
You'll be pleased to know that Joel Helms, who was so incredibly French last week.
Oh, yes, yes.
Well, he's stayed in France. Well, he's not actually in France, but he's stayed in the mood.
He's got one of those pencil mustaches and a stupid beret.
Yes. And the beret
and
looks
kind of
so smart.
Odd odour sort of thing.
Oh, no, I don't think so. Oh, no.
Yeah, it's like from having too many French fries and mayonnaise or something. It sort of exudes
nothing
from
wrong
his
with
pores.
That. Nothing wrong with that. Now, Joel has been driving the Peugeot 308 wagon. Thing is, wagons, how many are there at the moment?
You can't buy a Falcon wagon anymore.
No.
You can buy a Commodore wagon.
Oh, you can.
But it's not
really
a Commodore, is it? You can buy that new Holden car.
That's right.
It's called a Commodore.
It's
in wagon
called a
form.
Commodore. Or is it called a Calais or something in the wagon form? I think
you can get it in both, both guises.
Yes, that's right.
It's the one with the identity crisis, the Holden with the identity crisis.
It's very you. It's a nice car.
But when it comes to
small
cars, yes, it is. Well, the Golf. We drove the Volkswagen Golf wagon all-track. Great little car. And, of
Lovely,
course, you can get the Golf R Grid Edition. A Wolfsburg edition, I think it is, which is the almighty 206-kilowatt 4-cylinder stuffed into the wagon.
It's
which
so you. It's not even
after
funny.
That car.
Yeah,
yeah,
not
absolutely.
Even funny, that one.
Skoda, they do a couple of wagons.
Yes. Yeah, they
who
do.
Else?
Well, it seems that Peugeot has got the 308 wagon ready to go, and it's a kind of alternative maybe to an SUV.
Well, it would make sense, because anyone who's driven an SUV who likes to drive understands that just sheerly due to physics and a high centre of gravity, they'd never handle as well as a car.
Yes, there are one or two exceptions that do go very nicely. But
sure.
In the main,
they're
just not going to handle as well as a car, and that's it.
Yeah, exactly right. So a wagon could be your bag if you like cars with a little bit of a sporting intent.
Hmm.
And I believe this Peugeot may just have that. We'll get across to Joel in just a couple of minutes. But before we do that, I just want to let you know that, Pete, you're going to take us for a drive in under 15 minutes in the brand new Range Rover Evoque.
Yes, absolutely. And this is a car that I haven't driven one for a while. I liked it very much.
Yep.
And then I forgot about just how good it is until I drove one the other day. Well, I'm still driving it actually this week. And I thought, wow, this is just terrific. Now, it's not a bad size. It's not too vast and clunky to get around in. Yep. It's just, you know, nice sort of mid-size, I suppose you'd say. They small look, to mid-size.
They do look small from the outside, but get into them and suddenly you go, where did this space come
from? That's right. Yeah. Plenty of space. And it is luxury. It is beautifully built. It's a terrific car. And it's a way of getting a Range Rover. Or is that a Land Rover badge? Because they actually managed to have both, just in case you're not sure. It's a way of getting into a Range Rover at not a bad price.
Excellent. Well, I can get you into luxury and a very well-built car too at a fairly premium price. But look, I suppose this is the sort of car that wants to remain exclusive, so it's always going to have that expensive price tag. It is the Lexus, their new flagship, the LS500.
Wow. What a car.
It's mental.
Yeah, well, what a car that
luxurious,
is.
Luxurious, but mental.
Yes.
Nutty.
You expect to see it in Ginza in Japan, don't you? Because it's that's where you see luxury cars, where money is no object.
Hmm. It reminds me a bit of, you know, I've never been to Japan, but I've seen a lot on social media where there's a big thing about Japanese restrooms and, you know, Japanese toilets have, you know, heated functions and squirters here, there, and everywhere.
Oh, yes.
You're kind of constantly expecting something like that to happen to you when you're driving along in the Lexus LS500.
Now, that would be a first. Still, I think it sounds like a lot of fun, the Lexus LS.
We'll do it soon. Well, it was kind of rather French last week.
Oh, wasn't it just? That beret.
Citroën C3 and... Yep. The croissants and the bonjour,
the absinthe, whatever it was you were drinking. I'm not sure.
It was you on the absinthe, not me.
Oh, no, thanks.
I had to wheel him out of the studio. It was hilarious.
No, not at all.
Dribbling and everything.
Bonjour.
We are going to continue with that French theme because, of course, it was Citroëns that we were talking last week. And this week it's Peugeot with the one and only Joel Helms. And I believe, Joel, you may well have discovered a car that is a perfect replacement for a wobbly SUV.
Yeah, it is, I guess, like the Citroën last week. We were talking about it being a good crossover or small SUV alternative, and something slightly bigger is the Peugeot 308, available in hatch, and a very impressive little vehicle it is in hatch form, and I know that you're a big fan, particularly of the GTI version.
Yep.
But the wagon is also available. It'll be available in one specification level, but there aren't that many small wagons around anymore, so this is certainly one that you might want to check out if you don't want to jump right up to a full-on sort of SUV, i.e. something like an ASX, a Mitsubishi ASX or the like.
Yeah, well, we used to, of course, be able to buy a Corolla wagon. I'm pretty sure you can't get one of them anymore.
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah,
Nissan Pulsar doesn't even exist.
No, yeah. Born.
Mazda 3 wagon, no.
And because I suppose everyone's decided, well, we want an SUV, but there will be some people who just want to have a wagon. So
Sensible folk.
Yeah. How would they get on, do you think, Joel, if they ended up with the Peugeot 308 wagon? Would it do the job of an SUV?
I think so. I think probably your only advantage, or it could even be a disadvantage with an SUV, is that you'd have a higher cargo space floor. So if you were lifting, for example, a pram in and out, you might find the SUV potentially to be easier or potentially to be more difficult. I suppose it depends on how tall you are and what size load you're putting in, et cetera, et cetera. Realistically, though, aside from perhaps a slightly lower roof line, I don't really see any great advantage to going to something that has potentially, or maybe even allegedly, some off-road ability.
Exactly. Yes, allegedly sometimes. Yeah. So what's the fit and finish like? How is it, you know, how does it look? Does it feel incredibly French?
Yeah, it's got a really solid feel about it. I think that's the thing that really stands out with this this current edition Peugeot 308. It really is solid and well built. And when you close the doors, it really does feel nice and strong and nice and protective. There's really chunky A pillars at the front, and that does provide a bit of a visibility issue when you're approaching intersections and things like that. So that is the trade-off of the really solid feel. On the inside, yeah, decent legroom front and back, enough space for three adults across the back row, and good cargo space as well. A lot like the Citroën that we both sampled last week.
Yeah.
You lose things like your standard climate control settings. That's all on the infotainment screen, but now you pick up things like digital radio and Apple CarPlay and Android Auto and... the tiny, weeny
steering wheel?
Little steering wheel.
Awesome. Love it. I know, as you mentioned, the GTI version of the Peugeot 308 is a cracker with 1.6-litre turbo. What's it like, or what we got under the bonnet of your garden variety 308 wagon?
Well, a little bit like how wagons perhaps are a little bit out of flavour at the moment. It's got a diesel engine under the bonnet. Remember those?
Oh, yeah. I've heard of them somewhere along the way.
It's a 2-litre turbo diesel, so it's a pretty heavy engine.
Yeah.
110 kilowatts and 370 newton metres, mated to a proper 6-speed automatic transmission. Not surprisingly, it gets along really well, and a really good cruiser on the highway too. That's heaps of torque, so you could load it up pretty well and you wouldn't feel those hills.
And what sort of dough are we looking at?
Okay, this is the only problem with this vehicle. Now, available only in the one specification level, Allure, which is a pretty well stacked offering, but you're looking at $38,000.
What?
Ooh.
As a starting price.
38?
$37,990.
For essentially what is a car the same size as the Golf Wagon, which you can buy for about 31, 32.
Maybe slightly bigger, I guess, having sampled both.
Yep.
It is definitely a price premium, but then it is well stocked. It's got everything that you could possibly want, about. Some of those standard features include autonomous emergency braking, reverse camera, sat nav, alloy wheels, electric park brake, push button ignition, etc.
Yeah, gotcha.
A couple of options you can go for with a glass roof's an extra 1,000, 18-inch alloys an extra 700, and then you're looking at 1,000 for premium paint. And Napa leathers an additional $2,500. So you could end up spending about $40,000, which is a lot for a small station wagon, no doubt.
But cheap for an SUV. There you go. If you're shopping it against an SUV, you'll be saving money.
That's a thought too. Now, what about warranties? How long do they look after you for?
5 years is the warranty on this particular one.
Okay,
that's good.
There's no ANCAP safety rating, but as I say, good standard safety gear, including the AEB, and you've got things like a driver attention alert system, lane departure warning, etc. So, yeah, look, it's a likeable car. If you're not that fussed about spending that little bit more, I would say that you definitely take it for a drive. It rides really well. It's got a slightly sporty feel about it. It's not a conservative sort of wagon. Even sounds pretty good, so yeah.
Okay.
All right.
Let's check it out. First place to start, behindthewheel.com.au. Read Joel's review. You can check out the pics. Joel, I reckon we do this all again next week in a different car.
Sounds good, gentlemen.
Love
good
it.
Work.
Thanks, man. Chat
Thanks,
soon.
Joel.
The ideal family vehicle has 7 seats, is spacious, practical, luxurious, and realistically priced. The new Havel H9 ticks all those boxes. The 2018 Havel H9 has just landed in Australian dealerships and boasts a turbocharged 180-kilowatt engine, 8-speed auto transmission, and more of the luxuries car buyers have come to expect from Havel. With 7 seats, great off-road ability, and a 5-year warranty, this is the ultimate family adventure SUV. Visit your Havel dealer to see what everyone is raving about, or havel.com.au. Headlights are so much better than they used to be. But there is one downside to today's plastic headlight lenses. They go all cloudy, dull, and sometimes even an off-yellow colour. Not only does this bring down the look of your car, these less-than-perfect lenses aren't giving you the beam strength and clarity that your headlights were designed to. There is a simple fix, however, and it doesn't involve getting new headlights. It's the T-Cut Headlight Restoration Kit. It's really simple to use, it works great, and clear headlights are just a few minutes away. Search for the T-Cut Headlight Restoration Kit in the Altrex Auto Accessories online store at altrex.com.au.
Behind the wheel.
Behind the wheel. Where motoring starts.
Yes, indeed. We're going to be driving in the MY18 version of the Range Rover Evoque shortly. I'm looking forward to that little drive, Pete. I know you've been pretty happy with it.
Yes, I have indeed.
A car that we spoke about a couple of weeks ago. I've got to say, I've had it for the last few days and rather smitten with it. It is the flagship of the Lexus range, the LS500.
Oh, they're wonderful, aren't they?
It's unlike anything else.
Yep.
It's almost as if the Japanese have taken up where the French left off. In kind of crazy, zany things and, you know, sort of buttons in spots you wouldn't expect.
That's right. Yep.
Yeah. It's kind of
crystal and
out
all
there,
sorts of things.
The weirdest material. But look, it really is lovely, as you might imagine.
Yes.
But look, we'll talk more about that later because now we've got to turn our attention to Audi. I know it's one of your favourite all-time car brands, mine too, Pete.
Yep, I love
and
them.
And some really exciting stuff just been released, just about to be released. So we might as well get the info
direct from the source, and it is Mr. Sean Cleary from Audi Australia. Welcome back to Behind the Wheel. Sean, how are you, man?
Good, gents. How are you?
Good to talk to you, Sean. You've, of course, been taking the RS4 for a spin. Still got your licence?
I do. Yes, I do. It's a close run thing. No, not quite. Absolutely. The new RS4, which is the fourth generation RS4, has launched very late last month in May. Mm-hmm. And so we're very excited by that. Obviously, the whole idea of an iconic performance wagon is it's quite close to Audi. We've quite a few models in our history that have really made their mark, and the new RS4 looks set to continue that.
Absolutely.
Yeah, beautiful. Look, a beautiful car and a beautiful base car on which it's built. I think possibly the current A4 is the best. It's certainly the best dynamically, got great balance, and of course that beautiful luxury and interior. I can only imagine the RS4 is just building on that in sort of in a big way.
Yeah, it is. It's quite angry, as you'd imagine. It's got a 2.9 litre bi-turbo V6, so it powers actually the same at 331 kilowatts. So that's the same as its
predecessor. Oh, is that all? Right, okay.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So not much at all. But it's got more torque, another 170 newton metres, which means it's a lot faster than 100 kilometres an hour at just 4.1 seconds.
An extra 170 newton metres, is that what you just said?
That's right. So 600 in total, a nice round number.
That is mad.
That's what a lovely number that is, too.
Hooked up to a dual-clutch 7-speed?
No, it's actually the 8-speed Tiptronic automatic transmission.
Ah, torque converter transmission. Right, okay.
Correct, yeah.
So what was the thinking behind that? Because DSG's been so popular over the last few years. Is it just the sheer amount of power and torque coming out of the engine that means that that's the best transmission for it?
A lot of it is torque, actually. Yep. And so there's sort of a crossover point where it becomes more effective for the, your conventional torque converter automatic transmission. And when you've got 8 ratios, that's plenty to shuffle through when you've got a lot of torque on offer. So, that's definitely, like the RS5 a few months ago, the 8-speed is the sweet spot for the new RS4.
Yeah, gotcha. I remember with the old RS4, of course, like the new one, has got the quattro all-wheel drive, but always distinctly felt like a rear-wheel drive car with kind of a bias of the power being sent towards the back. Is that the same in the new version?
It definitely can be. It's got essentially the same concept of all-wheel drive or quattro permanent all-wheel drive system, as we call it.
Yep.
That's the beauty of the car. I mean, it's for all intents and purposes, every day of the week, it's just an Avant that you can throw lots of luggage in and passengers and all the rest of it. But it's absolutely a sports car at heart, so that when you get take it on a twisty road or even a racetrack, if you're that way inclined, then it's absolutely up to the job.
Love it. How much money do we have to fork out to get one? This is where I'll get disappointed, I'm sure.
It's $152,900 plus on roads.
Is that cheaper than the last one?
It's very close to the last one,
yeah.
But it's got a huge increase in standard equipment, actually. So there's actually a real significant lift in features, obviously, that have available in line with the new generation A4.
Yep.
So there's a lot of key performance features that are standard there, including the Quattro Sport rear differential, the RS Sports exhaust is standard in Australia, as well as for the first time dynamic ride control. So that's the system that basically links the corners of the car diagonally, so that when the car's under load during cornering or braking or whatever, it actually tries to even out the cornering forces across the car. It's really effective,
clever.
Actually.
Really clever. Clever, isn't it? Yeah, absolutely. Mm. I know there's going to be loads of people out there just drawing at the thought and wondering how long it's going to take me to get one of these RS4s into the garage. Is there a waiting list, or can we roll down to the dealer now and bring one home tomorrow?
There's a strong list of orders. However, I think in terms of our usual ordering process, if someone wanted to custom order a car, which a lot of people do actually as part of our exclusive program, I think it wouldn't be too far away from our standard sort of order period of around 4 months.
Oh, okay, fair enough. Well, get to it. If you're keen for the RS4, and you'd be mad not to be, I would think. A few other great things. In fact,
yes.
An absolutely magnificent machine just revealed this week that looks remarkably similar to a concept car we saw a couple of years ago.
That's right. No, the Q8 we're very excited by. It'll be arriving in, it's expected in Australia in early 2019. Every SUV in our range has its own sweet spot with the customers in Australia, and proven very popular since the first one launched, which is the Q7, over a decade ago now. Mm-hmm. And so we're really excited for the new Q8 to arrive as the new halo within our SUV range.
Yeah, sounds pretty good. Speaking of good SUVs, I'm sure I saw some spy pics the other day of an Audi Q2 with an S badge, SQ2, I think someone was suggesting, quad exhaust coming out of the back of it. Would you happen to know anything about that?
Oh, I'm sure I wouldn't know anything about that at all. You must be mistaken.
Right, okay. We'll move on. Before we let you go, the A8, every time I open Facebook, I see the most technically advanced car ever produced by Audi, soon to be released, with some just amazing features. Like, I believe there's a safety feature where the A8 will kind of hoik itself sideways in anticipation of a T-bone accident to protect the occupants. Super smart stuff. I know Pete's a massive fan of the A8. The new one's not far away.
Mm. Yeah, it is. And what you mentioned there is part of the Active AI suspension, and there's a lot of what we call Audi AI, so artificial intelligence. Obviously, you can work it out. But it's all about really intelligent features that that are available in the new A8, some not from launch, like the one actually that you just mentioned there.
Okay.
But also another really important point, and obviously it's quite topical, the whole discussion around piloted or autonomous driving.
Yeah.
So the A8 is the first car worldwide that's been developed capable of level 3 autonomous driving. Again, that won't be available at launch, as there's still some work to do in terms of legislation, homologation, and then finalising those technical requirements in accordance with that.
Yeah.
But just the prospect of, you know, your car driving itself is pretty exciting to be not too far around the corner, isn't it?
Yes, indeed.
I can't wait. And it looks magnificent. I'm sure you've had a bit of a preview of it in the flesh.
Yeah, absolutely. It does look amazing. It's the first car to really display our new design language, thanks to our new head of design, Mark Lichter, who's obviously our current head of design.
Yep.
But because these cars take quite a few years to go through the process of design and R&D and then finally production, this is actually his first car. So it's really exciting that it is our flagship, and it sets the tone for the rest of the models that will follow in the next sort of 12 months. So we've got A7, we've got A6. Obviously mentioned Q8 earlier. So it's really exciting that we've got the new A8 launching now, because it really kicks off that really exciting new wave of product to come.
I love it. I will fill you in that Pete refused to buy the ham and cheese toastie before we came into the studio because he's saving his money for the new A8, he told me.
Oh, well played. Well, that's a great strategy, actually. It all counts.
It does, doesn't it? If you'd like to see pics of the amazing Q8, the RS4, the A8, you can head to our website, behindthewheel.com.au. Sean Cleary, I'm sure you've got them up at audi.com.au as well.
Absolutely, we do.
Excellent. Mate, good great work to talk to you as always. We'll chat again soon.
Terrific. Thanks, guys.
Noticed all the light commercial vehicles on the roads today? Well, we figured this booming segment of the market needed a new focus. Ute and Van Guide provides unbiased reviews of new utes and vans available on the Australian market. We drive and use these vehicles as they were intended to ensure you get the best information and opinions based on real-world experience before you decide which new ute or van to purchase. And stay up to date with the latest commercial vehicle news too at uteandvanguide.com.au.
You've heard us on the radio. Now check out the Behind the Wheel website. At behindthewheel.com.au, you can browse all our latest car reviews and car product reviews too. You can also watch our video car reviews and check out all the latest auto news. And make sure you leave your comments. Give us feedback, ask for advice, or just let us know all about your car. Behindthewheel.com.au, where motoring starts.
Behind the Wheel.
Behind the Wheel. Where motoring starts.
Yep, we still got to go driving in the flagship Lexus LS500. It's not the LC, because that's the coupe and that is just amazing.
Yes, no, it's the LS500.
Which
it's
is,
the
of
limo.
Course, the car that they started it all with back in the late 90s. And
right.
Everyone went, are they going to be a success? Yes. And look at them now.
Luxury Export US.
That's it.
That's what Lexus stands for.
They've nailed it. It's mad. I think I mentioned at the top of the show, it's not as conservative as you might expect. There's some interesting design flourishes in there. Ones that you think,
I love that.
But I love it.
I love the spindle grille and the look of Lexus at the moment. It's very out there, very avant-garde, very contemporary Japan. And the stylists there, the designers who do great stuff.
unique and individual and still very classy all at the same time. Anyway, more pressing things right now, Mazda 6. It's been probably our favourite mid-size car, I think.
More great design there from Mazda. They're beautiful looking.
They really are great cars
and people absolutely love them.
And I know with Mazda, every time you get into one, you always feel like you're driving a much more expensive car than you actually are. You know, remember the CX-9, car of the year last year. Yep. Feels like an $80,000 car, yet you buy it for $48,000-$50,000, which is really good. Mazda 6 similarly has always felt like that, but it's been in for a big overhaul. And to tell us what cosmetic surgery and further enhancements have been made, it is the marketing manager for Mazda Cars Australia, Alistair Doak. Welcome back to Behind the Wheel. Alistair, how are you going, man?
I'm going very well, and thank you.
Great to have your company today. Tell us all about the new, the revised, the, I'm not sure if it's a refreshed for midlife or... Tell us about the latest edition of the Mazda, the Mazda 6.
Yeah, probably all of those descriptive words don't actually do it justice. It's an amazingly big update for the car, and yes, there's the obvious things. You know, you look at the front end in particular, and we've changed the design of it. And if you actually go back and look at the Vision Coupe concept car from Tokyo Show last year, you'll see very, very similar design themes across the front end of new Mazda 6 with the kind of mesh grille and, they've kind of lowered the center of gravity, made it look wider and stronger, more planted on the road. So that's the kind of the obvious thing. And then there's some cosmetic changes at the back of the car as well with bumper bars and tail lamps and things like that as well.
I think the thing I'm most excited about is that that real peach of an engine that was in the CX-9, the 2.5-litre turbo petrol, you've managed to shoehorn that under the bonnet of the new Mazda 6.
Yeah, we sure have. So all three engines in that car, they're naturally aspirated 2.5, the diesel, and also adding the turbo 2.5. So, everybody's a winner there when it comes to powertrain. But yeah, you're right, 170 kilowatts, 420 newton metres. It's a beautiful engine. It works really well in CX-9. And, of course, on a Mazda 6, you're pulling around a few hundred kilos less. So, obviously, the performance step up is even more significant there. But, it's a beautiful combination for that car.
Yeah, look, it really was. I know Pete and I were hugely impressed by that engine, and I think at the time we should get one of these into the Mazda 6, which has always had a very competent chassis, but I believe even the chassis has been in for a bit of a look.
Oh, absolutely. And, we're saying at the beginning, really the changes that have been made under the skin are more significant than the cosmetic ones that you can see. So, yeah, the R&D guys in charge of this car in Hiroshima, they've really... fettled the chassis. They've made some fundamental changes to the chassis, but then beyond that, they've also changed the suspension. Things like the damper structure is totally different, and the dampers themselves are now 3 mils bigger than before on diameter. So real attention to detail right across the whole car, and that has improved handling, but also steering response. And ride comfort as well.
Excellent. We've been talking wagons earlier in the show. We were talking about the Peugeot 308 wagon. And, of course, you can actually still get a station wagon version of the Mazda 6 too, can't you?
You can indeed. It accounts for about 30% of sales.
Is that so? That many?
Yeah, well, you could argue that we probably should be selling more. I mean, those wagon cars, as opposed to a wagon SUV, are still incredibly... practical vehicles.
Oh, nice.
In theory, a lot of people, it would actually suit people better than the default position in the marketplace currently, which seems to be SUV.
But yes.
We offer wagon across all of our grades, so from sport up to a Tenza. So yeah, there's loads of options there.
So you can get the perky one with the 420 newton meters turbo petrol. So it's almost like a sporty wagon.
Indeed, yes.
Yeah, I love it.
And then the other option there, of course, is, if you do long distance and like diesel, then the new diesel spec actually even has more torque. It now has 450 newton metres of torque. So
right. And what sort of fuel economy figures are you getting out of the diesel these days?
Oh, it's into the low fives on the sticker, which is a great number. So it's very impressive.
Absolutely. I think we've kind of sort of touched on this and the fact that SUVs are the flavour of the month. Do you think the Australian buying public actually is aware enough of how great the Mazda 6 is? Do you think people are sort of missing it a bit?
I totally agree. I think people are missing it a lot. It's the whole segment. There is a number of nice cars in that segment, but people, they're not even on people's shopping lists. So we've seen the decline of the mid-size segment for years and years now. Mm. And, you know, you're right, every time we discuss Mazda 6 internally here, we always think, we should be doing more of these. But then we're happy to sell, you know, 2,500 TX5s every month, so I guess you can't complain too much.
Yeah, no, fair enough, too. And talking of SUVs, of course, there's the big daddy of SUVs about to land to the CX-8, which we've never seen here before.
Yeah, so that's all coming up this month and officially on sale in July. But, yeah, it's a great addition to our range. So that car was designed specifically for the Japanese market to replace the MPV, the people mover over there. And they were, Mazda, I guess, saw a niche in the market there and decided to offer a three-row SUV, the first one on offer there, and it's done incredibly well. So we put our hand up for that because, obviously, it brings diesel, and currently, obviously, CX-9 doesn't have a diesel option.
Yep.
And it is slightly smaller than CX-9 as well, so it kind of does the walk between CX-5 as a five-seater and the flagship SUV for us, which is CX-9, and CX-8 sits somewhere in between. So for us, we just thought, you know, with the insatiable appetite that consumers have for SUV, you know, more options the better, quite frankly. And, yeah, we're excited to have it.
Now, has it been tested for ANCAP safety ratings?
It hasn't yet. Because this car is only sold essentially in Japan, they don't use the NCAP rating currently, so we are just about to embark on that process. So I think the first of the four crash tests that they do is happening next week, and then there's also on-road testing now for the new, much stricter 2018 NCAP protocol, and those tests actually have to happen in Europe, so we're having to fly a CX-8 over to Europe to do those. So we're hoping to have the result of that testing by the end of next month. And obviously, you know, we believe from our own internal measures and simulations, et cetera, that we think we'll be able to achieve a five-star rating.
So, and no doubt helped by things like automatic emergency braking and so on.
Absolutely, yes. It will have all of those things as standard, yes.
And in fact, that pretty much goes for every car across the Mazda range these days, doesn't it? I think you're about one of the only manufacturers to do it.
Yeah, that's right. We took a position there that we think that all of our customers should have access to that safety technology. Yes, we've pushed it across everything from Mazda 2 right up to CX-9.
Excellent. I hope every other manufacturer out there is listening.
Yeah, yeah.
See what you can do. You can actually fit it across the range. Alistair, so we'll get off our soapbox now, and thank you for your time. It's always great talking to you, mate.
Oh, an absolute pleasure. Thank you very much for the invite.
Excellent. Anytime. And I'd encourage everyone to head to your Mazda dealer. Check out the new Mazda 6. It's a cracker. Okay, you can tell with the train noises in the back, we've made it downstairs to the behind-the-wheel garage. Pete, this car in what Lexus call crimson, but I like to call metallic chocolate brown, is the new flagship, the LS500. Your first thoughts?
Oh, I think it is absolutely glorious looking. That is amazing. It looks incredibly avant-garde, contemporary, modern, yet it's a very large limousine-y type sedan. Absolutely beautiful. Now, I love the LC500, the sporty
coupe.
Coupe, beautiful.
It looks like something out of a Tom Cruise movie set in 2070.
And is absolutely glorious to drive. And this one, well, I haven't driven this one yet, but I tell you what, by the look of it, it is just glorious. Absolutely amazing, and it's not stodgy. You know how some big limousines look kind of stodgy, and you'd have
slab side, clunky,
but from the outside, this looks terrific, and I can't wait to get in it. And look at those wheels! Look at that lovely grille, very contemporary looking, very modern looking, which, as I say, in these big cars, don't always get that.
No, you're right. And you've got 20-inch chrome plated alloys, which is stunning.
Yeah.
Just if I click the button here, just get a look at the LED array that you get in the front of the car. It is just...
Oh, yes.
It is beautiful. The light system that they've got both front and rear on the exterior of the car is like nothing else. They've just taken it to a whole new level. But it's the intricacies of the design around that spindle grille. You know, you've got your air intakes and you've got that LED with the flourish that goes up, sort of joining up with the lines of the rest of the car. And as you say, it's a lot curvier and kind of more, sort of contemporary and modern than LS500s we've seen in the past.
That's right, which of course had been around for quite a long time.
Mm.
So, this is the latest incarnation and I love it. I love that sinewy look. And I like, as you pointed out, the lights that
that sort of go up and sort of are continued on the line of the car all the way through to the rear treatment. It's terrific.
I reckon we get in. Yeah, you hold the mic.
All right, here we go. Let's do it.
Oh, how wonderful is this?
Climbing.
And I like those, the privacy shades, just to make sure that prying eyes are kept outside. Oh, the seat. Oh, the front seat is going forward. Thank you for making it do that, Miller. That is just terrific.
Yes, just wait. This is the sort of opening act of its party trip.
Oh, this is amazing. You could just about, if this would only sleep flat, you could just about turn this into a bedroom. It's huge.
Right, okay. So if that's what you'd like, perhaps.
I wasn't really thinking of that, but still, let's give it a crack and see what happens.
Okay, so if I press this button here...
Oh, wait a minute. I'm getting a massage, I think.
No, you should be getting a footrest.
Oh, footrest.
So there you go.
The yes, footrest is coming out.
Just like your recliner at home.
Oh, this is just amazing. Jeeves, take us for a spin round the block, will you? I'll just sit in the back here.
All right. Would you like a little bit of relaxation, perhaps? Perhaps you'd like a full body refresh.
All right.
Okay, there we go. Let's have your full body refresh.
Oh, that's lovely. Yes, well, what it's doing is it's pummeling me and kneading me and just letting me know. The only thing that it lacks, and I'm pleased about this, is, you know, if you go in and have a massage somewhere, they turn the lights down so you get violently depressed and play this
music.
Oh, and you think, no, just turn the lights on, please, and kill the music.
Yep.
This, however, doesn't have that. It's just got the massage, which is amazingly good. Isn't wonderful. And, that massage is good. It's quite good, actually.
Oh, how about a full body stretch? Let's go for
the stretch. Good idea.
See if we can stretch you out. And while you're being stretched, I'd like to draw your attention to the trims on the doors.
As
you can see, we've got multi-layered trims.
Yes.
So you've got a privacy blind, then you've got your normal kind of door trim.
Yes.
Then on top of that, some sort of plate.
Yes, I've noticed that.
Which houses a speaker and the door handle itself.
Oh.
And then behind that, you'll see LED lights.
Oh, yes.
And then a kind of skin in what could only be described as a stitched suede.
Beautiful.
And then your armrest as well, which kind of just hangs out there on its own. You know, everywhere you look in this car is intricate detail.
It's
beautiful. You know, there is nothing that has been left, I think, to chance. You know, even the surrounds around the air vents in the back here are beautifully done.
Yep.
Look at the junctures here of the stitching and the way the front seats are put together. You know, these big, what are these? There's going to be 8-inch screens, I think, both on the back seats.
Yeah.
And at the moment, I'd suggest I could drive you to Sydney and you'd be quite comfortable
sitting
there.
Absolutely. We'll stop every 2 hours. If you're doing the driving, have to stop every 2 hours so you can take a nap. I'll just sit back here and enjoy myself.
But does this not remind you of, not that I've ever been in one, but one of those first class suites you get on, you know, your Emirates Airlines or Qantas or something along those lines?
It does. It does. It very much does, actually. And I have... actually had the pleasure of travelling that way sometimes.
Yes, yep.
But in Japan, you'll see this sort of thing
a
lot. And quite often, they have chauffeurs.
Yep.
And they have doilies. I don't know that you could put doilies on the back of these seats.
No, I don't know if the doilies would work.
But you wouldn't need to in this car. It's gorgeous.
And as you can see,
we're
beautifully insulated. We've got a 5-litre, 351 kilowatt V8 engine under the bonnet. She's rather thirsty, averaging about 15 litres per 100k.
Ooh.
It's a big car.
It's kind of indulgent motoring, but gosh, it's glorious, isn't
it? So the question is, it competes against the Mercedes-Benz S-Class, the BMW 7 Series, the new Audi A8, which we've just heard about with Sean. Would you, if you were spending more than $200,000, be satisfied with the Lexus badge?
Oh, yes.
Yeah?
Oh, yes, without a doubt. Especially this car, the look of this car. I think that'd be lovely. Some people are badge driven and would prefer to have a BMW or a German badge or maybe, although they're German owned, a Bentley or a Rolls-Royce or something.
Yep. But
no, I like this very much. I'm very impressed with the Lexus way of doing things. You know, they've done a wonderful job starting off as an export for the United States market and conquering all in the meantime.
World domination. Mm. It's worth looking up. Check out our website, behindthewheel.com.au. At least see the pictures of the new Lexus LS500. It really is beautiful.
Australian families looking for the ideal vehicle for their needs are often left frustrated. Some vehicles seem to tick all the boxes but then cost the earth. Others are well priced but don't have the space or features that families need. Stop compromising, as there is an option that won't leave you wanting more. The new Havel H9. Boasting a 180 kilowatt turbo engine, 8-speed auto, 5-year warranty, real off-road ability, and 7-seat capacity, the Havel H9 just can't be beaten. Visit your local Havel dealership today or havel.com.au.
One of the smartest and most versatile products in the Altrex Auto Accessories range is Skin's Invisible Protection Film. Apply to your car's headlights or paintwork to protect from stone chips and road debris damage without affecting aerodynamic efficiency or the look of your car. You can use the ultra-thin and strong film on items around your house, such as windows, furniture and white goods. Order a roll now at altrex.com.au or pick some up at your local auto accessory retailer. Skin's Invisible Protection Film. The clear choice in paintwork and headlight protection, and a whole lot more.
Behind the Wheel.
On the road. Accelerated by behindthewheel.com.au.
We've been on the road in an Audi RS4, a Mazda 6, a Range Rover Evoque, a Lexus LC500, a Peugeot 308 GTI. I don't know whether we've got any more fuel left in the tank to take another one around the block.
I can think of somebody who's just right for that particular task because he's energetic, he's fantastic, he knows his cars.
And it must be Simon Joel Helms. Simon Lyle.
Hi, Chris and Peter. How are you going?
Good, buddy. Hello. How are you, man?
Not too bad.
Now, I believe you've been driving a Jeep. Have you had it for a week?
Yes.
A week?
Yes, I have.
How many times did you have to take it back to the service department for a recall in that week?
Oh, dear. Let's not go there. Yeah, they don't have the best track record. But, yes, hopefully if you buy one, it won't give in after a week, which this Jeep Compass certainly didn't.
Right.
I had Compass Limited, which is the second from the top.
Okay.
And it's priced from around 42 grand. It was a bit of a mixed bag, this one, I think. There were some bits of it that I liked and some that I didn't.
Okay. Now, just let us get in our heads what the Compass is, because we know what the Cherokee is.
Yeah.
Now, we know what the Grand Cherokee is. That's the one you see everywhere. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Then you've got the Wrangler, the old-fashioned one that Mork and Mindy used to drive all those years ago.
Right. Yes.
And then you've got two other kind of weird ones, and I believe one of them might be the Compass. So are we talking like a RAV4-sized four-wheel drive or something bigger?
Well, Compass, just imagine a Cherokee, but smaller. It looks almost exactly the same. It's just a compact SUV. They're just trying to have something out there to fit that segment of the market. This particular one has a black roof, which costs an extra $500 or so. The drive was quite nice. I mean, it was solid, it was stable. There wasn't any faults that really stood out. The steering was precise, it was nice and tight, had good dynamics. The only thing is it didn't really deliver much power right off the mark. It doesn't have a turbocharger. But, once you get past that lag, it has a bit of vitality there.
Goes all right.
And of course, it's an off-roader, so there's full four-wheel drive, which is not really common in an SUV of this size.
No, that's true. You said there were things about it you didn't like, so what are they?
Yeah, well for starters, the inside is a bit plain. I mean, it's got a lot of black plastic. The seats, although they're leather, they weren't like really figure hugging like a lot of them are nowadays. It was really flat. Wasn't like kind of bucket.
Into
they weren't really bucket seats. Well,
it's like he likes to drive along being spooned. It's kind of
Simon, ignore
you've
him.
You've never seen me in a little black dress, have you?
He's being entertaining.
I've got the pictures. Don't worry, I've got the pictures.
you guys always ask me about the baby seats and ISO fit now, and it does have it. It's got the basic ones, where they just slot the anchor like in between the seats. There's no little port or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
But for some reason, it was really hard to get one side in. Like, I don't know if it was the material or whatever, but it was just really hard to click in, and it was the first time I've had that problem. Storage was an issue, I found. Although it is existent, it's sort of small. And, the little center console cubby that is quite common nowadays, you can, throw your phone in there or whatever. This one had one, but it was filled with all the auxiliaries like the USB and the 12-volt port and the four-wheel drive dial. So there was only tiny space there just to fit a box of Tic Tacs, I reckon.
Right, okay. Which, of course, you always have with you. Simon, would you buy one? Would you recommend anybody else buy one?
Well, it's like I said, it's a bit of a mixture. It had problems I found with oversensitive lane departure and sensors and things like that. But the drive was good. It had some good features. I love the powered tailgate. It had a button which was at normal height. It wasn't on the door, so you didn't have to crane your neck and close the door. But Yeah, it's one of those segments that's really growing now, the small SUVs, and there's so many options out there, so I'd probably say shop around.
Excellent.
Yes, okay.
Shop around.
Wonder what else in that price range and in that size range you'd go for.
Volkswagen Tiguan?
Well, there was the one I Mazda drove 6, a while 5. Ago, the 3008, that was fantastic.
Peugeot 3008?
3008, yep. Yeah, that's right.
You're spoiled for choice in that segment, aren't you?
The Evoque? Yeah, you are now.
Oh, yeah, it might be a bit pricey, because the Evoque's probably got another 10, 15 grand on it.
That's right.
So, but, you know, I reckon it's 10 or 15 grand of money well spent.
Yeah, I'd say so too.
Anyway, if Jeep's your thing, I would strongly urge you to go to behindthewheel.com.au and there you can read Simon Lai's brilliant review, up for a Walkley Award, I believe, Simon.
I'm hoping.
Oh, well, let's hope so.
See you next week, man.
Cheers.
Bye, guys. Bye. Ciao.
Alrighty, product review time for our great mates at Alltrex Auto Accessories. That's Alltrex, Alltrex.com.au. Head there and order yourself a pair of Alltrex number plate protectors. Alltrex have been the leader in number plate protectors for years now, and there's some really good reasons why that is the case. First of all, as you know, they're an Australian-owned company, means that you can pick up the phone and go, I've got one of those little slim black and white number plates that you can only get in Victoria. And they'll go, yeah, we know the ones. Or you can say, I've got those Queensland personalised plates. And again, they'll know exactly what you're talking about because they're here and it's not going to cost an international phone call to Mumbai to get the runaround and not get an answer. Secondly, their product not only fits properly, but it looks great and it's the strongest, most durable available. And of course, as I say, because they're locals, they know all the different plate sizes and variants. You can even get personalised messages printed on your number plate protector.
Yep.
You know, so, you know, the way you'll see, you know, Bob's Holden dealer, you know, that's driving right. you further. You can make up your own, you know, Peter Hitchener, king of television.
Oh, yeah, right. Good luck with that one. But still, that's a good idea.
It is
a good idea, isn't
absolutely.
It?
Absolutely. Alltrex.com.au. They don't cost very much. In fact, they're probably the best value thing you'll buy all year. Buy your mum a set right now for Christmas. Order them now. Go to it. Alltrex.com.au. Yep, we always save the best till last, but in this instance, we've kind of tried to change things up a bit, and here we're going to introduce Rachel Franco.
Hi.
How are you, good? You are, of course, the best. It's the highlight of the show each and every week.
And you're too kind.
I'm interested to discuss with you your suggested topic, which is how safety equipment in cars has improved over the years. So we'll start
safety.
That's it. I think we should start with Pete and find out what his first safety equipment that he noticed in a car, you know, sort of coming up. Sorry.
All right. I can help you with this because, as we all know, I got here slightly before everyone else.
By
about 40 years. But anyway, I can remember when my first memories as a passenger in a car when I was very young was people who were driving would do hand signals out of the car. So the driver would put their hand out and make a stop sign, or if they were turning right, they would make a right-hand sign.
No, you're kidding.
I'm not. I'm not quite sure how they indicated they were turning left. I think they just did it.
Flash the hand?
Yep. Yeah. I think, well, no, because the hand wouldn't reach across out the other window.
Oh, of course,
great,
yeah.
Alec.
No.
Stick over the rubber glove on it.
And so isn't that amazing? Now, this is...
How did blind spot monitoring work back then?
Exactly. Crash. But the thing is, after that came seatbelts, of course, which was a great Victorian development, and good on the authorities in Victoria who introduced them. And that must have been in the
60s?
60s or 50s.
Do you know, it's really funny because I was thinking about that this morning. I vividly recall being about 4-ish because we were living in Melbourne. We were living in Avondale Heights. And I can remember my mum taking me with her to get the back seat fitted with seatbelts.
Good work.
So it must have been introduced and it was mandatory in the front only or something.
I think you might be right, because I remember as a kid
early 80s.
Sliding across the back of a blue vinyl seat in the back of an HR Holden where there were seatbelts up the front that all the adults refused to wear. They were bloody uncomfortable things. I'm not putting these stupid things on.
Oh,
did you cop that resistance too?
We adopted them straight away, actually.
In our intelligent family.
No, we adopted them straight away. We did have seatbelts in the back seat of the car, and I remember I can't remember if it was I or my sister who used to bop the other sibling across the head with them because they had sort of long handles and you really whack one another quite hard.
Those metal ones in the Holdens you'd be sitting in the sun all day and you'd go to put it on.
Yes, they would brand you, wouldn't you? I think I still have a seatbelt mark on my thigh there from
I forgot about those
years ago.
Of course, we had seatbelts. Then we see things start to amp up, sort of, as you say, in the 70s where we saw the first car ever with anti-lock brakes.
Anti-lock brakes, marvellous.
Was that in the 70s, was it?
It was.
Yep.
Pioneered by Mercedes-Benz.
Yep.
Of course.
I remember going back, a little bit of reminiscing here from the good old days, but I remember one of the great things about living in the bush and living on the other side of the creek was that when there was any kind of flood, my sister and I couldn't go to school, the primary school, for weeks at a time because you couldn't get across the creek.
Yeah.
The rest of the time you went across the creek, but of course we had drum brakes. And so for the next couple of Ks, till the brakes dried out, stopping was something of an art form. And I do remember one day my aunt driving us, we went charging down towards the gate out onto the main road and she couldn't stop the car, so we did an abrupt U-turn, zhoink.
Handbraking.
Was that the first ever drifting?
Well, it sort of was, actually, although I don't know whether that was really ever done in an old Chevy Ute, but anyway.
I love it. Anyway, we could go on like this for ages. We got to go. We're out of time. Let's do it again next week. Rachel Franco, thank you very much.
Thank you, guys.
Go on, you Pete. See you then.
See you. Cheers.
Noticed all the light commercial vehicles on the roads today? Well, we figured this booming segment of the market needed a new focus. Ute and Van Guide provides unbiased reviews of new utes and vans available on the Australian market. We drive and use these vehicles as they were intended to ensure you get the best information and opinions based on real-world experience before you decide which new ute or van to purchase. And stay up to date with the latest commercial vehicle news too at uteandvanguide.com.au. Havel's just released a new family 7-seater SUV, the Havel H9. A finalist in the 2017 4x4 Australia Awards, the Havel H9 is an impressive SUV, boasting a 180kW turbo engine, smooth 8-speed auto, 5-year warranty, real off-road ability, and 7-seat capacity. The luxurious Havel H9 will take you to the outback and back in complete comfort. It's the ultimate family adventure SUV. Visit your Havel dealer to see what everyone is raving about, or havel.com.au.